You're listening to an African Elements top news story for June 24, 2026. Please visit our website at africanelements.org for more daily news. Why the fight for Black reparations refuses to die. On June 9, 2026, the Congressional Black Caucus convened on Capitol Hill to outline a federal legislative agenda. Led by Representative Ayanna Pressley, lawmakers and policy experts gathered to discuss reparative justice. This pivotal meeting highlighted a long history of demands for economic repair. These demands date back to the end of the Civil War. The modern debate over reparative justice often appears in news headlines as a fresh controversy. However, the struggle is well over a century old. It represents a continuous effort to address systemic wealth disparities. This article explores the historical foundations, legal battles, and statistical realities of this critical movement. To understand the modern fight, one must examine chattel slavery. Chattel slavery was a legally codified system of enslavement in the United States. Under this system, individuals were legally classified as personal property. Enslaved people were bought, sold, and inherited like physical assets. Consequently, they possessed no legal rights to own property or earn wages. This system enriched white enslavers while denying Black families the ability to build wealth. Generation after generation, the fruits of Black labor built the foundational infrastructure of the American economy. Yet, the workers themselves received absolutely nothing. This structural denial of equity created a massive economic divide. The resulting wealth gap persisted long after physical emancipation occurred. Historically, the Civil War failed to end slavery in terms of its economic legacies. Therefore, the roots of the racial wealth gap remain deeply embedded in this history. The political origin of reparations traces back to January 1865.
Union General William Tecumseh Sherman met with 20 local Black ministers in Savannah, Georgia. He asked these leaders what emancipated people needed to secure their freedom. Their answer was clear and unanimous: land. Therefore, Sherman issued Special Field Orders No. 15 to address this urgent need. This directive set aside a 30-mile-wide strip of southern coastline for Black families. Each family was to receive not more than 40 acres of tillable ground. By June 1865, 40,000 freed people settled on roughly 400,000 acres of land. They began building self-sufficient farming communities. This project was the first federal attempt at systematic reparations in U.S. history. However, this radical experiment was short-lived.
Following the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln, President Andrew Johnson assumed power. In the fall of 1865, Johnson rescinded the field order. He ordered the military to evict the Black families. The land was returned to former Confederate owners. This action destroyed the foundational wealth of thousands of families. In the late 19th century, a formerly enslaved woman organized a massive movement for financial redress. Callie Guyhouse was a widowed seamstress from Nashville, Tennessee. In 1898, she co-founded the National Ex-Slave Mutual Relief, Bounty, and Pension Association. She envisioned a federal pension system for formerly enslaved Americans. House traveled across the South to organize local chapters. She mobilized hundreds of thousands of supporters. At its peak, the association claimed nearly 300,000 dues-paying members. This massive organization petitioned Congress for pensions based on decades of unpaid labor. This effort represented a monumental struggle for economic justice. The federal government viewed this mass mobilization with extreme hostility. Indeed, officials feared the growing political power of Black citizens.
Consequently, they targeted House and her organization. The movement faced aggressive federal suppression. This hostility culminated in a major legal battle. In 1915, Callie House and attorney Cornelius Jones took bold legal action. They filed a class action lawsuit titled Johnson v. Dot McAdoo against the U.S. Treasury. The lawsuit sought $68 million in federal cotton tax revenues. The plaintiffs argued these taxes were derived directly from enslaved labor. However, the courts dismissed the historic lawsuit. The legal system relied on the doctrine of sovereign immunity. This doctrine dictates that citizens cannot sue the federal government without its consent. Because the United States government had not consented to the lawsuit, the court ruled it lacked jurisdiction. To dismantle the organization, the U.S. Post Office Department intervened. Officials accused House of mail fraud. They claimed she was collecting dues under false pretenses because Congress was unlikely to pass a pension bill. In 1917, an all-white, all-male jury convicted House. She served nearly 1 year in prison. Although her imprisonment fractured the association, her legacy as a pioneer remains secure. The policy discussions on Capitol Hill today rely on historical legislative efforts. In January 1989, Representative John Conyers Jr. introduced H.R. 40. The bill was titled the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act. The number 40 honored the unfulfilled promise of 40 acres. Conyers reintroduced this bill in every legislative session until 2017. Dangers. Following his retirement, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee took over sponsorship. Under her guidance, the House Judiciary Committee advanced the bill in 2021. However, the bill never received a full floor vote. Crucially, H.R. 40 does not mandate or fund financial payouts. Instead, it creates a federal commission to study the legacy of slavery.
The advisory commission would recommend appropriate remedies to Congress. In 2025, Representative Ayanna Pressley stepped forward to sponsor the bill. She represents a new generation of leaders pushing for a comprehensive federalism and black politics strategy. As the debate evolved, new advocacy groups emerged. In 2016, the American Descendants of Slavery movement was founded. This group, known as ADOS, seeks to restrict reparations strictly to descendants of U.S. chattel slavery. They draw a sharp distinction between native-born black Americans and newer black immigrants. ADOS advocates argue that the unique harms of Jim Crow and redlining specifically impacted native-born families. Therefore, they insist on a lineage-based model for federal programs. This perspective has sparked intense debate within the black community. Critics argue that a narrow definition of eligibility may divide civil rights coalitions. Nevertheless, the lineage debate remains a central theme in modern policy discussions. Because federal legislation remains stalled, local municipalities have acted. In 2019, Evanston, Illinois, created a municipal reparations program. The city funded the program through a tax on recreational cannabis. It provides $25,000 housing grants to eligible black residents. The program targets the historical effects of redlining. Redlining was a discriminatory practice where banks and federal agencies refused mortgages to black neighborhoods. Consequently, redlining prevented black families from acquiring home equity. This practice severely limited the transfer of generational wealth. Evanston's program seeks to correct this specific housing injustice. However, local programs face severe legal challenges. In 2026, critics filed a lawsuit alleging that the program violates the 14th Amendment. Opponents argue that using race-conscious criteria violates the Equal Protection Clause. The U.S.
Department of Justice intervened, claiming race-based public funding is presumptively unconstitutional. This legal battle has significant implications for other local reparative efforts. Proponents argue that reparative justice is an economic necessity backed by data. Currently, the racial wealth gap is extremely wide. On average, non-Hispanic white families hold 8 times the wealth of black families. The median wealth for white households is over $184,000. In contrast, the median for black households is between $23,000 and $31,000. This wealth gap directly impacts human lives. A study published in JMA Network Open revealed that black Americans have a life expectancy that is 4 years shorter than white Americans.
Researchers concluded that this longevity gap is directly linked to household wealth. Wealth provides access to better healthcare, housing, and nutrition. Another epidemiological study modeled the impact of closing this wealth gap. Researchers simulated a wealth injection of $905,000 per eligible black household. The study concluded that this intervention would reduce premature mortality among black adults by 29%. Thus, reparations represent a potential life-saving health intervention. State governments are also exploring reparative options. In 2020, California established a landmark reparations task force.
The task force issued a detailed report calculating the state's historical liabilities. Following this model, the Michigan Legislative Black Caucus introduced a comprehensive legislative package in June 2026. The Michigan bills propose a state-level reparations commission. They also suggest creating an office to serve descendants of slavery. This localized push demonstrates a bottom-up strategy. State and local leaders are building momentum while Congress remains divided. Historically, the Congressional Black Caucus has served as the conscience of Congress. Founded on March 30, 1971, by 13 members, the caucus has long championed civil rights. The June 2026 Capitol Hill Roundtable reflects their enduring commitment to economic repair. By coordinating local, state, and federal strategies, advocates hope to advance a unified agenda. Copyright, African Elements.